Welcome to session 263, the LDS Purity Myth. I was asked to remind you, or notify you in case you didn't already know, that there's a giving tree in the registration lobby. Give to Sunstone, because it gives back. You can find the details there. Our speaker today is Darcy Benincosa. And she has a very interesting bio, and I'm going to hit the highlights. She has a BA from BYU in English education. She served a mission in Florida, and after completing the mission, moved back to teach inner city high school there. She has a master's degree from NYU in education. She's been to Brazil, Asia, Europe, all over the United States. She writes for a couple of magazines. She does freelance work. She's been in Paris over the summer. And she's... Oh, I love this one. She volunteered in Ireland for the Irish Wheelchair Association. And she's going to tell us something really interesting today. Okay. Oh, and don't forget to turn off your cell phones, or God will smite you.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being here. This is a much larger crowd than I expected being a first-time presenter at Sunstone. Okay, so before I delve into what the purity myth is, I want to explain what it isn't. It isn't a convenient argument created to justify sexual activity. Simplifying it to that definition, as many have done, only continues to perpetuate the myth that is weighing heavily on the female population throughout the world, and in particular the LDS culture. So I just feel like I needed a disclaimer. All right, so the purity myth is the continuous message that a woman's worth lies in her ability or her refusal to be sexual. In our world, in every major society, flashed across every television screen, printed in every magazine, and sung by every scantily clad teenage pop icon, the women of today are being taught that their bodies and their sexuality are what make them valuable. And I believe that to simplify womanhood as only equating sexuality is actually what is hurting the law of chastity as set forth by the LDS Church. I teach high school, and one of the other things we didn't mention, but I see a lot of things every day that I would have a hard time imagining if I wasn't at the heart of it. Last spring, one of my blossoming 16-year-old girls, actually, she's already blossomed in a beautiful way, a gorgeous young woman with a body any 25-year-old would envy. She came in and told me that the health teacher, a 67-year-old LDS man, taught the class that any woman who had sex without being married was a prostitute. That exact conversation went something like this. Health teacher, now girls, you know that many of you give into sex because you want the guy to like you. What would you call girls who do that? Young woman, are you trying to say that they have a low self-esteem? Health teacher, no, not that. I'm trying to say that there's a certain word for girls who give away sex without being married. Young woman, I don't think I know what you mean, even though she did know what he meant. The entire class knew what he meant. And one boy shouted out the right answer. A prostitute? And general laughter ensued. The health teacher, with a shrug of his shoulders, said, "You said it, I didn't." The young woman came in to talk to me after the class because she was very disturbed, and so was I. This is not the first time that the health teacher has said inappropriate things, especially to her. A few months ago, when someone came in to teach the kids about diseases, using the typical scare tactics and false information that most abstinence-only education uses, this young woman asked a question about how someone gets mono. The health teacher said, in front of the entire class, "Well, if you'd stop kissing all those boys, you wouldn't have to worry about mono." This man knows nothing about this young girl or her interactions with boys, and honestly, what he said really, really affected her. The same girl, incredibly sure of herself and of her intelligence and beauty, perhaps a bit intimidating to most people her age and maybe even to her health teacher, had another interesting experience. There was a dress for success day at school, and she came in a pencil skirt, a fitted blouse, and heels. She looked gorgeous, not slutty, not homely, perfectly lovely. She came in to speak to me again at the end of the day, upset by all the things that the male population had commented to her that day, and even some of the female population. Whistles, catcalls, comments about her being easy. Again, this girl did look like a beautiful, classy 25-year-old businesswoman, but What do her experiences reflect about our culture? I think it's important to start at the very beginning of how we are sexually defined. The first and I would say most important label we are given is that of virgin. There has always been the idea of equating the word pure with the word virgin. There's the ever-pervading idea that a person's virginity or loss of it can profoundly affect that person's life. But what virginity is, what it was, and how it's being used now to punish women and roll back their rights is at the core of the purity myth. Lara Carpenter, author of Virginity Lost, An Intimate Portrait of First Sexual Experiences, said, "I think the emphasis put on virginity, particularly for women, causes a lot more harm than good." So we have the definition of virgin. It is on dictionary.com. Jessica Valenti, in her book, The Purity Myth, where I did take a lot of my ideas, says that this harm has as much to do with the fact that virgin is almost always synonymous with woman. Outside of the occasional reference to the male virgin in a form of a movie, the word virgin is all about women. The stories about virgin sacrifices are never about men. Even the dictionary definitions of virgin cite an unmarried girl or woman, or a religious woman, especially a saint. No such definitions exist for men or boys. If you look at the world today, the extremes are getting more extreme. Society has a porn culture that is continuously growing and gaining speed. And at the same time, and at the opposite spectrum, there's a re-energized abstinence-only movement. Many claim that more women today are promiscuous and easy. Sex is still often portrayed as dirty and sinful. But I don't think that's the real problem, nor do I think that idea paints a clear picture. In fact, I think the picture is painted by scare tactics and fear. What I do think is the real problem is that women are still being judged, sometimes to death, on something that doesn't really exist, the label of virginity. As it goes, there really isn't a working definition for what it means to be a virgin, at least not one that everybody agrees on. Pam Blank, the author of Virgin, The Untouched History, manages an online site related to teen questions about sex and sexuality in a safe forum. The most asked question she receives again and again is, "I did such and such, am I still a virgin?" It appears that many young women don't know themselves when they have crossed the line from virgin to non-virgin. Blake decided to figure out the definition once and for all, yet in researching medical dictionaries, encyclopedias, anatomies, Blake found that all of the definitions were subjective. The working definition that Blake has come to use is the state of not having partnered sex. But if virginity is simply the first time that someone has sex, then what is sex? If it's just heterosexual intercourse, then we'd have to come to the fairly ridiculous conclusion that all lesbians and gays, men, are virgins. In asking several people about what sex is, most say it's penetration, some say oral sex, and some have said that it isn't sex unless you have an orgasm. This paper's not going to go there. But it is interesting to know that this whole concept of virginity has so many varied definitions. Does it make you wonder about the amount of levity placed on the label? Have the teachers of chastity reverted to placing shame on women to get them to be chaste? Have the lessons that most young girls get taught today been simplified to tell them that all they have to do to be good is not have sex? To simply cover themselves up and don't let anyone touch them, no matter what natural feelings they have? Of course, chastity and purity, as defined by the virginity movement, are not just about abstaining sexually, so much as they're about upholding a specific passive model of womanhood. For women especially, virginity has come to be the easy answer, the morality quick fix. You can be stupid, vapid, and unethical, but so long as you've never had sex, you're a good, i.e. moral, girl, and therefore worthy of praise. It's an interesting state of affairs when women have to do simply nothing in order to be considered ethical role models. In Spencer Kimball's book, The Miracle of Forgiveness, you knew I'd bring that in, Heber J. Grant has been quoted as saying, "There's no true Latter-day Saint who would not rather bury a son or daughter than have him or her lose his or her chastity, realizing that chastity is of more value than anything else in all the world." This bodes the question, is chastity simply equated with virginity? Is a virtuous person simply one who remains a virgin? Do we as a culture place more emphasis on the technicalities of a person's body than on the actual character of the person? And the other question Is it really better to die than to lose one's virginity? In November 2005 issue of Sunstone magazine, Roy Thorne wrote a short piece called Technically a Virgin Movement Taking Off. It reads, a new movement intended to promote chastity and virtue has become the new hip thing among LDS youth. Promoters say the Technically a Virgin movement is a realistic answer to the vexing problem of teen sexuality. Tiffany Bingham, a junior at Mountain View High School in Provo, says she feels way better about myself ever since joining the movement. It used to be I'd be out with Jared, my boyfriend, and we'd start fooling around, and I'd feel all icky and sinful afterwards. But now I think, hey, technically, we didn't break any, like, major tech commandments, so it's all cool. And Heather Hansen, a senior at Timpview, added, it's like Sister Reeves, our awesome new young women leader, says, there may be a stain on your skirt, but there's not a stain on your soul. And while I admire Sister Reeves' advice that they're not having a stain on the young girl's soul, I wonder how we are really defining chastity. Is it really as simple as remaining technically a virgin? According to most abstinence-only education, it is. All right, are you ready for the abstinence education part? Okay. One of the major tools in teaching abstinence-only is the ever-present idea that sex makes you dirty. Sex is dirty, and women as tainted messages are central to the virginity movement and are perpetuated most visibly in the most unfortunate of places, our schools. The ways in which teenagers are being taught about protecting and preserving virginity should cause alarm for all of us, no matter what differences we hold regarding the subject. Let's go through a few examples of how abstinence is being taught in schools and marketed in the malls. Here's one lesson. Your body is a wrapped lollipop. When you have sex with a man, he unwraps your lollipop and sucks on it. It may feel great at the time, but unfortunately, when he's done with you, all you have left for your next partner is a poorly wrapped saliva valve sucker. One popular classroom exercise employs scotch tape to demonstrate how premarital sex can make you dirty. A teacher holds up a clear strip of tape meant to represent a girl in front of the class. Then the teacher puts the strip of tape adhesive side down on the arm of a boy in the class to symbolize his sexual relationship with the girl. Then the teacher rips off the tape, signifying the breakup, I assume, and holds it up again for the class to look at. Students are meant to see that the strip of tape, the girl, has picked up all kinds of dirt and hair from the boy's arm and is no longer clean. Then, when the teacher tries to stick the same strip of tape to another boy's arm, he or she notes that it doesn't stick. They cannot bond. To end things with a bang, the abstinence educator makes a remark about the girls being used and therefore unable to have strong future relationships. Another program in Nevada used its abstinence-only state funding to run public radio service ads that said, girls will feel dirty and cheap after having sex. They were eventually pulled due to public outrage. A popular abstinence product is a gold rose pin handed out in schools and at Christian youth events. The pin is attached to small cards that reads, you are like a beautiful rose. Each time you engage in premarital sex, a precious petal is stripped away. Don't leave your future husband holding a bare stem. Abstain. Again, I'm not advocating teenage sex, but do we really want to teach our daughters that without their virginity, they're nothing but a bare stem? And more than this, the consequences that are told to young girls, they will be dirty, tainted, damaged good, or bare stems, none of these things relate to the girl's inner sense of self, but are mainly words used to describe how men will view and treat women who have been sexual. The fact that these examples nearly always focus on girls is no coincidence. After all, our bodies are the ones that get objectified, and it's our morality that's supposedly in jeopardy. As much as we have the attitude that all our girls are turning into uncontrollable people that could be on Girls Gone Wild videos, I think the other extreme, that of idealizing virginal girls, is just as detrimental to sexual development, and maybe even more so in the LDS culture. I polled several LDS women during my presentation, and one woman said, there are immense cultural problems with how we approach chastity in youth, or even with the whole membership. Our youth are scared of sex, and usually not for any particular good reason, but more so for what will my ward, family, friends think of me if I screw up? Another woman has said, I keep coming back to how much I hate the idea of virginity, especially when that virginity is based off of dubious definitions of not having had sex. There's keeping the law of chastity and there's virginity. The two are different things. Some people will try to expand the meaning of virgin to include only those who keep the law of chastity, but that isn't what it means, and that isn't what people think about when they say virgin. Emphasizing virginity places extra weight on women's sexual status. Yes, men can be virgins too, but the connotation of virgin is female, and encourages fixating on details. This is how you end up with teenagers having oral sex and thinking they are A-okay because they haven't had sex yet because they're still virgins. The perfect virgin, young, pure, and chaste, is at the center of advertising, telling girls that the only way to be pure is simply to abstain from having sex. This means there's an awful lot of talk about young girls' sexuality, from t-shirts to abstinence classes to purity balls. By focusing on the virginity of young women and girls, the culture is doing exactly what it purports to abhor, objectifying women and reducing them to their sexuality. A popular t-shirt marketed at young girls is this one, I'm tight like spandex. Other t-shirts like Future Wife and Virgins Are Hot again emphasize that a woman's primary value is sexual through wifedom and through chastity. This next one's really good. Want it, duet, marry me. Pro-virginity organizations have taken to calling the ideal young woman a purity princess. This t-shirt, which is almost a proposal of marriage, represents what the perfect virgin should do. Focus all her time and attention on getting married as a means to an end for her sexuality to develop. This t-shirt, which I hope is a little disturbing, says, no trespassing on this property, my father is watching. I thought the time when we referred to women's body as property was over, but I guess I'm wrong. There's another one, nothing's coming off till my wedding ring is on. And finally, this one, top five reasons I'm worth it. My lips, praise the Lord. My legs walk the path of righteousness. My desire to please God. My chest holds my heart of love. And my bottomless devotion to purity. So, just one of the problems of having these ideas sprawled across the breasts of American young women is that it fetishizes young women's sexuality. Another problem is that girls presented as examples in the purity movement are by and large a narrow, idealized representation. Young, good-looking, straight, and white. And if I could go into more detail about all of this, I would, but I don't have enough time. Young women of color who are so hypersexualized in American culture that they are rarely positioned as the virgin. In the virginity movement or elsewhere are largely absent from discourse concerning chastity. How can you be pure if you're seen as dirty to begin with? There's no doubt that sexualization of girls has hit a crisis point. You need look no further than something as simple as Halloween. Long gone are the days of girls dressing up as ghosts or witches or a beloved superhero. Now the standard costume is sexy school teacher or playboy witch. There are even child pimp and hoe costumes. And you can buy your daughter a Playboy pencil set or your infant hellacious shoes, baby stilettos, anytime. It's not a joke. So, what's the answer? How do we counteract this over-sexualization? Is it simply by teaching the consequence of committing sexual sins? Maybe, but how are we teaching it? One church activity described by a fellow blogger went this way. The adults had us pretend that we were on a plane. The bishop announced the plane just crashed, and he asked us to think really hard about where we would end up that night if we had really died. They sent the youth through the telestial kingdom, which was the Sunday school room, the terrestrial kingdom, the relief society, and finally, voila, the celestial kingdom, the chapel. We were told the telestial kingdom was as far as we could progress if we had had sex, and that our parents would rather have us dead than for us to lose our chastity. Girls were told to fight rapists to their deaths rather than lose their virginity. In the terrestrial kingdom, we were told which lesser sins were allowed that would land us there. In the celestial kingdom, our parents and families were secretly waiting for us for a surprise testimony meeting. This is how it would be, joining our loved ones in the celestial kingdom if we didn't sin. Many tears were shed, and wayward girls and boys were set straight and narrow again. And I remember being scared to death because I was going to end up in the celestial kingdom for things I had already done. Okay, maybe that seems a bit extreme, but it's not that uncommon. I'd like to talk about a new trend in teaching young women to be abstinent. They are called purity balls. They are pure. I knew somebody was going to have fun with that. They're sweeping the country. More than 1,400 purity balls where young girls pledge their virginity to their fathers at a prom-like event were held in 2006, and these balls are federally funded. The girls can be as young as 6. Once the girls pledge their virginity, then the fathers make a pledge in return. They pledge to keep their daughter's virginity and until an appropriate husband comes along to whom the fathers can transfer ownership of their daughters. The girls and young women will often silently affirm their pledge to purity through the ritual of laying a white rose at the foot of the cross. The pictures show a purity dance with the symbolic bride and the girls.